This show is sponsored by NatureBox. NatureBox ships tasty and guilt-free snacks right to your door with over 100 flavors to choose from, like Asiago and cheddar cheese crisps, pistachio power clusters, and Big Island pineapple. You'll never get bored of snacking again. Try NatureBox for free by going to naturebox.com/badchristian. That's naturebox.com/badchristian.
You are now entering the Bad Christian Podcast.
How's it going, all you numbnuts out there? This is Matt Carter here, and I want to thank everybody last week who joined the BC Club or gave a one-time contribution. I told you a little bit about how we had a financial consultant in trying to help us in our organization, our music label, and our podcast accounting, and you know, everything we're doing. I appreciate that. We've been working with them, and it looks like things are going to be okay. They've told us we are a viable startup, and our valuation is just over $1 billion. A bunch of people from Google have been calling me this week, and Toby and Joey just bought houses in Silicon Valley. We're going to be moving the headquarters there with our staff. And I really wish any of that was even remotely true. The truth is, we're doing something a little bit more along the lines of cutbacks. But that's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. We keep our stuff streamlined. We're efficient. We're not like these bloated nonprofits where the CEO makes a bunch of money and none of the money ever gets to where it's supposed to go. We don't spend a whole lot of money. So if you give money to the BC Club, there's a good chance that it's literally paying for the microphone I'm using, or it's paying for Toby's beer money for the week, or maybe even a copay for one of Joey's doctor visits, chiro visits, massage therapist appointments, or urologist visits. So yeah, the money's been used for good stuff. And yes, in all honesty, thank you. The BC Club's bigger than we thought it could be, and this show keeps growing. Thank you for being a part of it. If you'd like to join us, badchristian.com/contribute.
3, 2,
move it along.
And you know.
All right, let's move it along.
Here comes the one. That's it. It's the Bad Christian Podcast. We are here today. It's the Bad Christian Podcast. And we are going to slay.
Wow, yes. Now, you know, that one was pretty much good enough to be like that could just be our opening. That could be our theme. It was like a real song with singing.
Toby just created a theme song.
I really didn't like it. I kind of was let down in my own abilities just then. So I
appreciate
would not want
it.
That to be our thing.
But welcome to the Bad Christian Podcast. Profanity. You guys never let me set the show up officially. I'm always...
Well, you are terrible at it, and we feel really awkward hearing you go, "Hey, guys, welcome to the Bad Christian Podcast. Let me tell you first, this ad, we're trying to sell you something. It's boring, man."
Hey.
It's so damn
boring.
No,
I don't want to use it for ads. I'm trying to do is you want to say stuff like, "All right, so we had this going on, we got some live dates, check out this and that, you know, kind of thing like that."
Just
and then I'd say, "Well, how are you guys doing today?" or something. I'm just trying to inform the people.
Right.
That's one of the benefits
okay.
of the you know, having a free podcast, you get to talk about
stuff. All right,
stuff.
Joey, let's don't interrupt me. Yeah. Welcome to the Bad Christian Podcast. Okay.
All right, welcome to the Bad Christian Podcast, everybody. My name is Matt. I'm here with my good friends Toby and Joey, and we've got all sorts of stuff we want to push and promote and sell to you today, and that's why we're here. Actually, I don't have anything at all.
We don't have anything to sell. My God, this podcast is going under. Man, I was joking. Please sell something. We got to keep this thing going. Hey, we got blood. I found out I'm O negative. I can give to anybody.
Are you serious?
Yeah, I can get, my blood can go to anywhere to any person. So, I mean, hey, join the BC Club and, for your family, for you.
Get some of
it's
Toby's
the summer.
Blood.
People get hurt. You might need it. You might need my blood. Join the BC Club.
Well, we do have the Emory Records doing well. It's still been incredible. And it's still, you believe it or not, a lot of people have not bought it. Only some people that listen to this show have bought
who?
It.
So
Joey has a big list of their names. There's several thousand people who haven't bought it yet.
Yeah, I will. Philip Johnson, Danielle Myers. She's from Pensacola, Florida.
Okay. B. Obama.
Mark Liverton from Topeka, Kansas. Do you want me to just
That's
keep
pretty
going
good,
and
Joey. Good
stuff?
Name. Yeah, I mean, I'm calling that.
Hey, I've got story time.
Buy the Emery album, though. If you hadn't bought that yet, just buy go pick it up on
Joey,
iTunes.
Did you buy the Emery album?
Hey, I saw.
Joey, did you buy the Emery album?
No.
Oh, my God.
Hey, wait a second.
Oh,
guys,
my Lord.
You guys have always encouraged me never to buy it. I've only bought one Emery album.
And you're saying this on air?
You guys. Toby, there's been one time where you actually said, come on, don't buy it.
I know, but I mean, this time it actually benefits you. You are part owner of BC Records. You would be doing something for yourself and your family. All right.
In fact, Matt pointed out that I'm actually not even listening to the final product. When I listen to the Emery album, I'm not listening to the real thing.
You listen to a WAV file.
It's just good, though. I mean, so guess I do need to get a
story time. You got some stories for us?
Yeah, I do. All right. So, first of all,
can we shoot these down if they're boring or what? Are they serious?
Unapologetically, I'm going to tell these stories. I never care whether or not you guys like them because I always get hundreds of emails of people encouraging me to keep doing them, maybe thousands.
I mean, negative emails.
Diaper, awesome.
Yeah, so I just got back from vacation. I had the craziest revelation, and that is, you know, when you saw your parents do crazy things and you're just like, oh my gosh, that was so weird. We went to a water park, and I witnessed my kids watching Priscilla go down this huge, long, long, long slide. And when she came down and went to the water, they were dying laughing. And it was because they were just like, that's mom going down a big slide. And I was like, we're there. Like, we're at the point where I used to laugh at seeing my parents do stuff. So that's first story. Second story, my kids, they all gave me, y'all are enjoying Father's Day. Y'all are enjoying story time, I can tell. So Father's Day, Priscilla got all the kids to answer these questions. My dad is as brave as kind as smart as goofy as generous, huggable, hardworking. So listen to William's answers. My dad is as brave as a lion. My dad is as kind as God. Wow. I'm as kind as God. I'm as smart as a dolphin. I'm as goofy as Donald Duck. I'm as generous as God. I'm as huggable as Jesus. This kid's obsessed with the Trinity. I'm as hardworking as Toby. So when William thinks of hardworking, Toby comes to mind.
Wow.
Now,
he's
Matt,
the
that kid's got a
hard
head
example
on his shoulders.
Of hardworking.
Well,
in
I
his
love
mind.
That man.
Matt, being the
love
guy,
you, William.
Being the guy on this podcast that's worked the most with Toby, what's your reaction to that?
That William is
I am hardworking.
That William is one demented little kid. He said, "What? You might need to get him checked out."
All right, listen. Yeah. All right, so I'm glad you guys are enjoying this. This makes me feel like I can contribute to this podcast.
We love you, Joey.
Yeah, thanks. So last thing is, Matt, I pulled into our parking lot of our little townhouse area, and there's an older man that we know and love. And he stopped the van that Priscilla was in. So Priscilla's in the car with the kids. I'm pulling by and I stop, and he is in a serious conversation with her, telling her about some suspicious activity that was going on around our townhouse with someone coming to the door, doing things. And he said, I'm very alarmed. He said, but I got the license plate. I know the van. And he started to describe the van. And then he just started to describe the person, and it was Toby. So I think we were a hair from there being wanted posters in our neighborhood of some sketch artist.
Now, I don't know if you saw this or not, but I wanted to bring this up. I saw a tweet pointed to it last week, and it said that CJ Mahaney tweeted something I thought you might find interesting. He said, like, the most important thing a Christian can do is, like, listen to a sermon, or is, like, something like that. Like, the most important thing is on Sunday for there to be a sermon. That's the most important thing for a Christian in the whole week.
Well,
and it was like, whoa, dude, like, you mean just listen to me and this is the most important thing? That's really what he was saying. So I thought it was super weird. Or I don't even understand that.
No, I love it that he said that. I think he's so right. I think that what CJ Mahaney said about Sunday morning and a guy, usually, and honestly, I think we all prefer it, a white male, about 40 years old, just a great sense of humor. That's what we need to be doing to spread the gospel.
Most important part of the week.
Yeah, what's more important? Spending time with your family? Going to places where Christians aren't and hanging out there? That's stupid. That's the stupidest thing you could do. The place you need to be is singing songs that are like telling you how bad stuff is, but it's probably going to be okay, and you're going to feel better at the end of that sermon, and then you need to, you know, just go about your life.
But the, right, songs, so are but, the songs are but so, a warm-up,
I
though.
Feel like y'all aren't listening to
no,
me.
I'm trying
to tell you the way to...
Matthew.
You agree, don't you, Matt? You
yes,
agree,
I do.
Don't you, Joey? The only right way to spread the gospel of Jesus Christ, because this is what Jesus did. Jesus, when he started his ministry, he first of all got funding, and then he got a building, he got coffee, he got donuts, air-conditioned, comfy seats. The dude could preach his tail off.
He made everything relevant to where people understood exactly what he meant.
I mean, as far as I can tell, every single thing that he did was basically a sermon in front of lots of people, and he took a love offering, and that's what he did. And that's how you spread the gospel.
All right, so I'm going
Joey,
to...
Joey, do you agree with me? Matt, do you agree?
Yes,
why are y'all
I agree.
Acting so
I
crazy?
Agree. I'm not. I'm with you.
Matt, I'm actually... Okay, so we all sense Toby's sarcasm.
Nope. This is not sarcasm. Yes, why would you say that?
Yes, it is. Matt,
the only way to preach the gospel is in front of a bunch of white people and a white man telling us that.
I am going to
actually...
C.J. Mahaney nailed it. C.J. Mahaney nailed it. The most important thing, way more than me being a good dad, spending time with my family, way more than me working hard for my family, is listening to him tell me about God.
Point.
I'm tired of trying to fight it. He is right. He is right. Anybody listening, please, no matter what, please listen to sermons on Sunday, because there is nothing more important than that.
Yeah. No, Joey, you're wrong about that. Sarcasm is not what Toby is doing right now. It's definitely,
yes, here's,
it's perhaps contemptful mockery, in fact, but it's not, right. It's not mere sarcasm.
Well, here's the thing, and I want
to get in trouble right now and say what C.J. Mahaney might be full of.
Right.
I would love to say what he potentially could be full of, because he is wrong.
Right. Well, let me say this.
I'm mad. Right. I'm like emotionally mad that I heard that.
Well,
makes me lose my shit.
We don't even need an interview for this episode, by the way. We could just keep going. But let me
God
say this.
Heaven.
I just wanted to dip into that really quickly. Joey, go ahead.
I
Toby,
know
you got
to
let him go.
I know that Toby does not want me to neutralize anything he's
saying.
Don't
neutralize it. I'm not going to let it either.
Listen,
we let you do your story time. No, no neutralization
Matt,
time.
No. Matt, it's basically more information. Toby actually had a conversation with me today talking about how he does not think that the Sunday morning model is a bad thing in itself. Like, in other words, the routine Sunday morning thing,
we've
he
all
is
heard
coming
him
around
say that
to think
a
that's
lot.
Exactly.
So no need
this
to neutralize.
Isn't,
is what I'm saying.
I'm not neutralizing what he's saying. I want to... Never mind.
What?
You were neutralizing
no,
you're
just
saying.
Trying to softening it or balancing it back.
No,
but we don't need it.
All I'm saying is Toby is not attacking the church. He's attacking what we think is the most important things to do in the church.
I'm comfortable allowing the full context to let that be apparent. I don't really think we even have to soften it with that. But I understand what you're saying.
I'm trying to look through C.J. Mahaney's tweets to make sure that he actually said that. I don't know if I totally trust you, Matt.
Let's pull it up.
Let's take a second here and just find it, because if that is true, I just can't understand why somebody would say something so outrageous. I mean, if he gets to say that, why in the world would somebody be mad at some of the things we say on our podcast? I mean, if you can say that Sunday morning, listening to a man tell you about God is the most important thing, not actually learning about God yourself. I mean, wouldn't the most important thing be reading the Bible for yourself and going, hey, I don't understand this. Let me study more. I mean, the most important thing is some guy at a church telling you about everything, the God of all creation. I can't believe it. Of course, it's important, but that's not the point. He says it's the most important. I hope I can find that this is not true.
You want the exact tweet?
Ready? Yes, I do.
It says this.
Oh, it's going to break my heart. It's just going to break
this
my heart.
This is 144 characters that nails it. The most important moment each week in the life of a Christian is the preaching event in the local church.
I don't even want to. I can't wait to hear what Toby has to say.
I mean, that's just clear. I don't think you have to go insane with
that. Y'all don't believe that, dude. Joe, you don't believe that, dude.
Of course not. I know you have Mahaney depression.
I mean, I believe the guy is a great guy. I believe that he loves his congregation. I believe all this stuff. But, I mean, come on, dude. What in the world? How could you say something so stupid? I mean, that's just the dumbest thing in the world. I mean, like LeBron says, I'm the greatest basketball player on earth. He can back it up, all right? You know, people say big things, and then they get but LeBron still got smashed in the media, and everybody's like, "No, come on, dude, you don't need to say that. You don't have to say something like that." Is preaching important? Is it of high importance? Even yes, I fully believe that. Don't tell me that that's the most important thing in my walk. What in the world? The audacity, the ego, the pride in that immediately makes me realize that it's the exact opposite of that then. If that's the thing, if my pastor says, hey, you know what? The most important thing in your Christian life is coming and hearing me preach. I'm going, no, dude.
I mean, he didn't say him, but clearly.
I don't go to your church anymore.
Yeah. That's insane. Well, here's a tweet that I wanted to, that I was going to tweet, but it didn't fit in 144 characters, but I was going to say the most important moment in anyone's the most important moment in anyone's week is the moment they click download on the Bad Christian Podcast, followed by the second most important moment of the week when they click contribute to the BC Club. But I didn't fit in 144 characters, so I think I'm gonna have to Facebook that.
I mean, it's just getting to be absurd sometimes when I can totally understand 100% why non-Christians go, come on, what are you guys doing? Or, how could you say something like that? Like, at the very least, if people are mad right now that we're questioning that, like because a pastor says something, it's actually potentially wrong that we're questioning it, right? I mean, we're questioning what a pastor said, which we should. We should test everything. I mean, pastors will tell you, hey, test this, watch this, be careful, this, and this, but don't test what a pastor says.
I love how they tell you you should test everything and all that stuff, but they know that nobody's going to do the homework. They count on that a lot of times when they make a claim of check this out or don't listen to me, get whatever, but they know that the people literally 80%, the numbers are in their favor, nobody's going to do their homework anyway.
I mean, it's just so absurd. Well, if preaching was the most important thing, then did God, as soon as Adam and Eve sinned, did He start doing weekly preaching? God came down, Jesus came down, He sent angels, and they just hey, let's get together on Sunday. And Adam and Eve and Cain and Abel, they all sat every Sunday and listened to a sermon from God. No.
Yeah, well, it sucks to do what you're doing right now.
They lived with God. They learned about God.
But here's the irony.
Go ahead.
Here's the irony is, what about that teaching pastor? So what's the most important thing for him to do? Because I'm looking at an article right now where three mega church pastors in the, I think, Orlando, Florida area in the last 6 months resigned because of an extramarital affair. Yeah. One of the pastors is in one of the 10 healthiest churches in America.
Yeah.
It's on the 10 healthiest list.
Yeah.
And I mean, sure, pastors are going to fall, but so basically you're telling me the most important part of my life, what if you went to that church? Do you really think now? I mean, sure, we can learn from people that sin. We do all the time.
Well, if he's telling the truth, then here's the worst thing in the world. Then every pastor that preaches every week is sinning in the C.J. Mahaney's eyes. They need to preach one time a year and then go listen to a sermon.
Why are they preaching? I agree with that.
If that's the case, if he's right, then I might concede. If every pastor goes, you know what, I'll preach once a year and then I got to get my listening in because I got to hear because it's the most important thing in my life. Oh, no, wait, that doesn't happen.
Well, the problem with all these things, when you have a power structure and a moral structure and you make claims like that, it's terrible because it takes a moron or an idiot like Toby to be willing to go on the anti-sermon stance. And so that's what it boils down to. Toby's saying stuff that's true, but he's the anti-sermon guy now. That's how that works. If you're in the position of moral superiority, or if you have power, the questioning it always sounds like Toby's a dummy or an idiot or he's anti-sermon, which you're not.
Now what anybody – you're right. What anybody would say is, oh, Toby doesn't like sermons. He's terrible.
Or you don't like C.J. Mahaney, which isn't the case either. But that's the cult. Right. It's a problem with moral structures and power structures and authority.
I actually will go one further. I don't know how far I will go with the actual – what a sermon is. I believe the sermon has changed over the years. You know, we talk about definitions and what they mean. I believe sermon has changed now to be – a lot different than it used to be, and I think sermons now are a lot of times sermon light and can potentially be about just the people and a lot less about God, and it can be that way, but just about prosperity and looking for the good and getting good stuff and all that stuff. Hey, well, but hold on, let me finish. But I just I hate that I can't even just say, nah, hold on. Let's own our Christian life. Don't tell me that the most important part is something that God gave somebody else to give to me. God gives me stuff, too, to use and lead my family. And God gives me stuff to tell people. And God requires me and asks me to learn more about him and to know more about him so I can be involved in my Christian faith, not just hearing it so I can walk out and go, oh, that was a great sermon. Oh, okay. I learned one thing, and it's gone 2 hours from now.
Yeah. Listen, this is very. I find this very interesting. I looked up the tweet.
I hate that y'all made me get on a rant. I was in such a good mood. I was being so nice and sweet.
Listen, yep. These people will never know that they're talked about on the Bad Christian Podcast. Spencer Prumley says, not because of your role in this, but because of the power of the preached word. I assume this, but might be helpful clarification. CJ Mahaney says, Spencer, exactly right. Has nothing to do with me and everything to do with the gospel proclaimed and applied. And then Evie Marie says, CJ Mahaney, are you suggesting that the preaching event is the best / primary place where the gospel is proclaimed / applied? Then Michael R. Cooley says, Andrew says, LOL, seriously? Would love to see where you find that sentiment anywhere in the Bible. And then somebody says, that you find this humorous shows the gravity of the current situation. I'm sure the enemy is pleased. Yeah. And then Andrew says, what do you even mean by the enemy is... He says, what do you even mean by the enemy is pleased that I find hero worship of celebrity pastors laughable?
Oh, so, I love this Andrew guy. We got to get him on the podcast.
Andrew on the podcast.
Seriously, he's got it nailed. You're right. I mean, well, I don't care what CJ Mahaney's response there. Oh, of course, I'm not talking about me. No, my preaching event isn't as important. Yeah, right. I'm just talking about... Or he's saying, yeah, my preaching event isn't that important, so why would he say it in the first place for other places? It's just...
I wanted
to tweet is how every wife needs to submit to really strongly to their... If they have a husband that's 6'3 and white and named Matt. Not me. Not me. I didn't say that. I'm just saying, you know, people that are musicians who have one kid and live in the Northwest. That you should, you know... Should totally submit to them and always. I'm not talking about me.
Yep. It's so ridiculous. It's just another thing. I'm just fired up because it really upsets me that people would so blindly just go, oh, yeah, that's true. Man, preaching is the most important part. No, come on. The most important part of your life should be your relationship with Christ and it be flourishing and flowering in all kinds of ways. And I know that's what people believe, and I know people would even admit that that's the case, even CJ Mahaney. But to say something like that, the reason I don't like it is I believe that that's potentially dangerous. It's not all the way explained. You only said it in 144 characters, and it is potentially also detrimental to a person's faith. But people are mad at us because we say a cuss word. But we talk about Jesus. We talk about owning your faith. We talk about learning more about God. Read a book. Don't read a tweet.
Yeah, this promotes consumerism and hero worship to the most. I mean, it's just dangerous.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course it does. It really makes it like preachers are the most needed thing in the world.
And the best part is...
Christians are. Christ is.
The best part is I thought this Christianity thing was going to be really hard and a ton of work each week, but turns out there's simply just a moment that I have to do, and then I'm good.
Actually, I know. I guess I should chill out. Hey, this whole Christianity thing.
All I got to do is listen to that
30
one
to 45
moment.
Minutes on Sunday
That's
morning,
the
and I'm done.
Part, and then I'm good.
Okay, yeah. I guess you're right. We're going to get in trouble again. We just can't. I don't know. I feel deflated that I promise you, here's what just destroys me. There are so many damn brilliant Christians and pastors and people, and I am the lone dumbass out here that is not smart. I have a terrible memory.
Absolutely.
I'm not a good reader. Nope. I'm not really talented in a lot of things.
Now you're preaching.
And I'm the guy that just says something a little different. I mean, I'm the guy. Can't anybody say something different? Do we all? Is Christianity, especially American Christianity here, does it have to be the exact same thing? I mean, we can't branch out a little bit.
Unless
you want to
be a subversive jerk like you, then yeah, you got to toe the line or something or do it in the right way.
It makes me totally understand denominations. I get it more and more now. You got to have them.
And here's where I'm really going to, once again, speak super highly of Seacoast is I've talked, you know, we've talked to the lead pastor a lot. He's a friend of mine, and he's actually said, hey, I'm sure.
His name's CJ Mahaney. Go ahead.
But he's actually told me word for word. He said, "Hey, of course you guys are going to talk against some of the stuff in the church." He said, I even assume you'll probably talk about stuff against what we do at Seacoast. And that's a posture of saying, hey, our church doesn't have it all right. And that doesn't mean, oh, I would agree with everything you're saying, but he's saying the conversation's healthy. Yep, it has absolutely. To happen. We can't just have this one size fits all. Everybody believes the same thing. And that's why I'm...
Well, I want people to understand, too, if I was in a room with C.J. Mahaney, I'd probably really like the guy.
Yeah, it'd be fine.
I think he's awesome. He's probably an amazing Christian.
We're just using that as an archetype of something that people say in a sentiment that's not reasonable. He's just a regular person like you.
All I'm saying is I'm upset with Christianity in general that we can say things like this and not second guess it, or you would get pushback like Satan's, in that. You know what I mean? Like, people can say, oh, yeah, well, Satan's telling you to do that because, I mean, this pastor, he's dead on. No, pastors get a lot of stuff wrong. They're humans, and it's proven all the time.
Well,
I mean, it's just proven all the time.
Yeah. Well, our time's up. We have to move on, but there's one more.
Good
there's
Lord.
One, there's
Good
one more.
Lord.
One more thing to point out before we get to our interview with Rachel Held Evans, and that is you should all go pick up C.J. Mahaney's biggest book. You know what it's called?
What?
Humility. That's his big book. That's his most famous book. That's what he's famous for.
I got to get that signed. I'm going to buy that and get a signed copy of that thing, man. Good Lord, I need to read that.
I almost couldn't keep a straight face saying that one, but that's true. I didn't make that up. All right. Another subversive voice in the Christian community is, in fact, Rachel Held Evans. We're excited to talk to her. We know that she's on the same page with us as a lot of things, probably not about a lot of things as well, but she's a blogger and author, popular, talented, and just a big voice for Christianity in general and for women. So we'll be right back. Rachel Held Evans.
You know what, Joey? I'm kind of hungry.
Are you serious? What are you going to do, man?
I don't know. Guess what? I'm a member of Nature Box, so I'm set, dude.
Oh, man, Nature Box. Man, you are in the club.
Hey, for the longest time, I have snacked, and I'm a snacker. Golly, you gotta snack. I love snacking. I would rather almost just snack and not eat a meal, and here's the problem with that. Usually, my snacks are pretty bad for you. They're not good, and I didn't know what to do, and I just keep getting bigger and bigger and bigger. My wife stops buying the snacks, so I had to figure out something because I – just like right now, get hungry a lot. And so I found Nature Box, and it is so awesome. They actually have over 100 healthy, awesome, crave-worthy options. And here's the best part. It gets delivered right to my front door.
That's crazy.
I don't have to go anywhere. I don't have to worry about, what does this have? What does that have? Because they don't have any of that junk in there. Zero artificial flavors, colors, or sweeteners. 0 grams of trans fats and not one drop of high fructose corn syrup, which is just terrible. It's like in everything. If you walk down the grocery aisles, if you actually have to go to the grocery store to find your snacks, I don't even know if you can find one in the stores without high fructose corn syrup.
What ones do y'all like, Toby?
Well, for me, I actually do love the sriracha roasted cashews. I'm a huge cashew fan.
Those are awesome.
And then it gives you that spice. I love that heat. I love that little twinge you get. And then also, I love the truffle popcorn. That is just amazing. I'm a huge popcorn person as well. I'm the guy that buys all the tins at Christmas for popcorn. And this popcorn is just unbelievably awesome. So that's what I love.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you this. If there's one thing that I have to say about Nature Box that's not ideal is you can't stop eating. Like the Parmesan garlic pops. That's what they're called. Parmesan garlic pop pops.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It's
like
delicious.
I can't stop eating that bag, man. It's so good. And this stuff just tastes so good. And it's really cool that you're snacking on snacks that are good for you.
I agree.
Doesn't
they're
have
so
the
good,
bad
and
stuff.
They're much better for you than all the other snack options out there. So right now, if you go to naturebox.com/badchristian, you can get a free trial
snacks. Free?
Free?
Right.
That's right. We have to tell the truth on this podcast. Are you exaggerating?
No, you get a free trial of their favorite snacks. Free snacks delivered to your door. What are you waiting for? So go to naturebox.com/badchristian and start your free trial today.
Break it down, Dada.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
Y'all like that? That's my theme song. This is Matt, and my new podcast is called Break It Down with Matt Carter. Maybe you've heard of it. So far, we've been through the whole Emery album, telling how it's made and what goes into it, and it's just kind of a window into the way that I think about stuff and the way that I understand stuff. Now, we're moving on to Break It Down Podcast 2.0, where I'm going to talk to other people, interesting stuff, music, science, philosophy, everything that interests me in an in-depth way. This week, I have Tim McTague from Under Oath, and we go through and break down some of the key elements from their albums, They're Only Chasing Safety and Define the Great Line. I had a great time talking to Tim. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. It even took a very personal twist. And go to breakitdownpod.com or go to badchristian.com/breakitdown. Or it's on the BC app. Anyway, how about some more of my really cool theme music? You're going to like this.
Break it down, oh, break it down. Break it down, oh, break it down.
Like Matt Carter.
Yeah.
Yeah, we really do enjoy reading, like, your thoughts and insight. I mean, I think it's, I don't know, it's really, really healthy for the church, whether they hate it or whether they love it, is still stretching people. When you started writing, did you immediately, were you already thinking way outside the box? Or did, you know, because I don't think either one of us followed you from day one. I mean, were you as liberal as you are now as far as your thoughts and approaches with the Bible?
Raging liberal. No, really, it kind of evolved over time. And I, especially when I first started blogging, I was definitely working out all of these thoughts publicly with my writing and with the community on the blog. So it's been, I mean, it's, I'm just in process like everybody else. So I don't think the exact same way I thought a year ago or five years ago or 10 years ago. But I've always kind of been that person who, like, brings up the inappropriate question, you know, or is thinking about things a little bit differently or questioning things and not sure, doubting. So that's been since childhood. I've been a little bit of the...
So that's kind of your regular operating mode as a person. So for you, pushing boundaries is a natural... It's just a natural thing. Just, have you always been aware of that?
Well, you could call it that. Yeah, you could call it that, or you could just call it being very awkward at small talk. I think it would be a better way to look at it. Like, you know, a baby shower isn't really the best time to bring up, like, the Holocaust and the problems. that Rachel has learned the hard way.
Yeah.
But this is kind of how my mind works. I'm always thinking about the other side of things and looking for other people who might see things a bit differently as well.
Now, growing up in Tennessee, is that what you think kind of led you to start blogging about Christianity and faith and all that stuff? Because there was such a, you were in the Bible Belt and it was so strong, you know, on that side of, you know, this is what God is. And did that push you to start writing that way? Just the opposite idea sometimes?
Probably. I mean, I think being raised in the Bible Belt, you know, so much of Christian culture is sort of married to just the general culture that it can be really hard to extract it and figure out, like, what does it really mean to be a Christian if it doesn't just mean going to church on Sunday like everybody does, if it doesn't just mean holding certain political views like everyone does. So I think the culture certainly shaped the sort of questions that I was asking. Although my family unit itself, like my parents and even the church I attended, were not particularly legalistic or I wouldn't consider them fundamentalist. I mean, they were certainly conservative. But so I was fortunate. I was kind of in a very conservative, borderline fundamentalist culture, but in a home that was very grace-filled. So it gave me the space to wrestle a little bit and to push back and challenge and ask some tough questions.
That's probably a really good place for that kind of voice to come out of, because you, like, instead of being reactionary against a particular upbringing you come from, like you said, a secure base, but in a culture that might have been something to react to, because it just, you know, seemed to have all the answers and everything. So I think that in your writing and the stances you take and the opinions that you have, I think that comes through as genuine, in my opinion. Not, well, like, not, not, I don't, that's what I'm getting at. I don't think it seems on purpose that to try to ruffle feathers or whatever. I think it does seem like a natural person expressing themselves and not being afraid, probably because if you said like you had a grace-filled good base of a family, not being afraid of what how other people could or would take stuff. And that's what we know is severely lacking, at least we think in Christian culture, is people that feel like they have to either toe a line or prove a point at the expense of being honest about what they may or may not think.
Yeah, like
I think a lot. Yeah, it's true for a lot of churches just are not safe places for people to ask questions or to confess the fact that they doubt or talk about sin or struggle. Or there's sort of this attitude that we come to church like as our Instagram feed, everything put together, every smile and darkness, no doubt, you know, and we kind of get rewarded for that. We don't really get rewarded for bringing those big questions to church, which is, I think, the best place to ask them, you know, in the company of other Christians and in the company of a community that loves you. It seems like that's a great opportunity to really be real with each other.
But yeah, I think that's where we've really missed it sometimes with the church is we get together and just hear, honestly, sometimes just one point of view from the pulpit. And if we're all together, why can't we just have some real conversation a little bit and, you know, kind of get real a little bit? And I think that's like even in your blog, that's kind of neat because you get to, and this is what we found as well, and this was going to lead into my next question, but it's interesting, like you get to put an idea out there. And like you said, sometimes your ideas have changed and you were like, well, that's not the same person I was. I'm not the same person I was 1 year ago, 2 years ago, five, whatever it is. And so when did you start ever getting any pushback? Like you were growing up, like we were talking about in the Bible Belt, like we always get from Bad Christian, like people come up to us and say, man, I love what you guys are doing. I don't agree with everything now. They always have to like clarify that some of the stuff that we say isn't right. But I mean, did you start ever getting any pushback where people were like, man, we really like you, Rachel, but that one thing you wrote, I don't know. When did that start happening?
Oh, yeah. I mean, if I had a dime for every time somebody said, I don't agree with everything you say, but I would be a rich woman.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, to me, it's an insult in the same sense that it's like, you know, you are beautiful. Your eyes, not so much. They're kind of ugly, but your hair, your nose, and it's just amazing. That's what appreciate it.
She's got a great personality.
Yeah.
It's like, thanks.
That's what happened to me this week at church. I had a very, very large beard up until last week. And now I went to church this Sunday, and so many people came up to me and go, oh my gosh, your face is so handsome. I am so, and I was like, well, so last week y'all thought I was an ugly piece of shit. You know what I mean? Last week with the beard was terrible. And I don't think people realize that, but it is weird that you can say those things. And I think your blog probably does what you want to start that conversation. It's not like you want everybody to agree with you. So it's appreciated. But at the same time, I don't know why they have to make that disclaimer so much or so strongly.
Yeah, well, yeah, and my husband's always, his response is always like, oh, were you under the impression that that was necessary? Like that we always all agree on everything before. It does seem kind of like an unnecessary preface to any conversation. Of course, you're bound to find something.
So are you hopeful or observing that Christian culture or churches maybe are changing? Or how do you feel about the optimism of the future to where it maybe could be a safe place where we might could overturn or, what's necessary? Do we need to overturn the culture or infiltrate it or change it gently from the inside or outside? How do you feel about that?
Oh, well, I'm super optimistic. And I think it really varies from community to community. And it's a combination of the leadership setting an open and safe sort of tone. I think churches where the leadership consists of people who are willing to sort of tell their own stories honestly and talk about their own struggles and their own doubts honestly really set the tone for the rest of the community and sort of frees everybody up to tell the truth and to be honest with one another. And I think it creates much healthier churches. So the way I see it is a healthy church should look more like AA or a recovery meeting than a country club.
Sure.
You know, healthy churches are places where the baseline is that we share a brokenness, we share suffering. It's the one thing all humans have in common is that we suffer and we sin and we struggle. And so if we have churches that start with that presupposition and churches where the leadership is willing to acknowledge that reality in themselves and not sort of pretend to be the expert on everything.
Absolutely. Yeah. Would you really be willing to be more specific on some churches or church movements that are doing both of those things?
Yeah. Yeah. One church that comes to mind is a church in Denver, Colorado called The Refuge. And Kathy Escobar is a friend of mine, and she co-pastors that church. And what I love about that church is they built it around the Beatitudes and the 12 steps of AA. So it's very much about coming together and bringing brokenness and questions and sins and struggles to the forefront and being honest about those. And so the way the leadership behaves in that context is that they sort of see their role as going first, you know, not having all of the answers, not solving every problem, not being the expert on everything, but just being willing to go first.
And do you have an example of a less healthy culture as well?
Oh, well.
even in a general way, even if you didn't name specific.
What was that laugh?
Yeah, like in a 5-mile radius of where you're at right now, could you just describe those?
Y'all are trying to get me in trouble. I would say any church where the pastor is expected to be an expert on all things. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, it's crazy. Not only do some people expect their pastors to be sort of an authority on scripture or on church, they expect them to be an authority on like finances and sex and parenting.
Yeah.
And it really is. It's ridiculous. And it's not just unhealthy for the congregation. I think it's incredibly unhealthy for the pastors.
Yeah.
Because of the pressure that puts on them and the expectations it's hard on their families. And it just creates this whole dynamic of expecting more out of a pastor than a pastor or clergy or priest can give, and then being disappointed when they're not able to give that. And it's this vicious sort of cycle. So the churches, and I don't think size of a church is matters so much in this, but churches that strike me as being healthy communities of people are the ones where people tell one another the truth, even when it's not pretty, you know, even when it's not neat and tidy with a pretty theological bow to tie on top.
And is that possible for a church with 15,000 people to have that?
That's such a great question. I don't know. I mean, I think it can. I really do. And I know I don't want to be the type of person to say every megachurch is a horrible place and, you know, consumer Christianity. I don't like to talk in big generalities like mm-hmm. that. Because, I mean, you know, talking with like somebody like Shauna Nyquist, who grew up in a megachurch, Willow Creek, that seems to be a really healthy community. And she, whenever she talks about her church experience, she speaks really warmly about it. And as a pastor's kid, too. So to me, that shows that it's not so much the size. It's more the posture and the attitudes that are fostered and the degree to which people are willing to tell the truth to one another. So I think it can happen. I think you can create a community in a big church. It's going to obviously take some doing. And I think maybe small groups are a way to foster that, you know, not just having everyone together on Sunday morning, but, you know, throughout the week, sharing meals together, ministering to one another, helping each other through hard times. You know, really, it's those church happens not just on Sunday morning when we're worshiping or Sunday evening or whatever. I mean, church happens when, you know, somebody shows up at your front door with a casserole because everyone in the house is sick with the flu. That to me is church, or sharing a meal together, or just coming along some, you know, alongside somebody who's suffering and sitting with them in their pain and sitting with them at the hospital. That's church too. So churches that really encourage that and foster that, I think, are encouraging to see.
Do you think that is so simple that that's what scares people? Like, or is it that it's really hard? Like, it is. I've been trying to think that same thought lately of like, why are people so opposed to that idea? Like we Joey and I actually work at a mega church, and we see the good there. And at the same time, I do see some of the consumerism of, it's just so easy to come in and this very good speaker, you know, pastor, whoever it is up there on the Sunday, is just, it gives me something. I kind of leave refreshed and it carries me through for 6 days, and I can get refreshed again, you know, on the seventh day again, and just carries me through. Like when you talk about that church in Denver, like that sounds so appealing to me, like just real. Hey, man, we're all kind of broken and we need some help, and let's go through a process together as a community. But that, I get, is, are people just scared because that's hard? You have to open up your doors, yeah. You have to sit across to somebody, and that could be awkward, and there might be silence, and you have to actually talk, and you work the whole day, and you're with your kid. You know, I mean, that sounds more like what, yeah, Jesus would do, but it's just easier to get your gospel in 35 minutes and pay some money and leave, right?
I think she nailed it when, I think you nailed it, Rachel, when you talked about it starting with the pastors. I mean, if the pastor is setting the church up as a, hey, I'm teaching, you're listening, I'm the guy you're looking up to, you're the one that's following, it's never going to happen. I mean, I've heard so many pastors say, I feel so lonely doing my job. And my answer is, well, that's your own fault.
Really?
Why aren't you talking to people? Like, why don't you have people in your church that you confide with, share things with? Why aren't you in community?
Don't we flip-flop a little bit, though? Because we say it's the demand of the people that calls it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of pastors are a little bit afraid to do that for understandable reasons. Like, because they're afraid they'll get crucified. Like, this is not something you can just suddenly start doing without some repercussions.
Well, what I think,
so I've talked with a lot of pastors who say, well, that's an easy thing to say you want us to do, but right, I don't know if my community will be open to me.
Well, I think what's funny is they talk so much about leadership and being a strong leader, and I'm thinking, well, then that's what you need to do, is you need to be bold enough to lead by example in presenting yourself that way. But Rachel
makes a great point. I don't think the people want that. They want the guy that just gets up there in front of them. They go, that's our hero.
There. Yeah, I feel like the demand is there.
Well, what kind of integrity is that to go with it then?
Okay, but I think
it's not integrity. It's what the people want. It's your job. When you have 1,000 people.
That's how you got there.
And you, all of a sudden you have 1,000 people, and they're like, and you're like, hey, let's break bread together this week and every week,
Sunday,
and don't come on Sunday or something. You can't do that. You can't keep the doors open.
But isn't that the problem? Because it's the way it started. Like once you have a culture going, it is really hard to change. And I know that about the band we've been in. I know that because that was the big problems they had at Mars Hill. I know that at stuff. Once you get a culture that's going and has a momentum, even a prominent individual can't necessarily change it. And even if you get rid of people, there's things that just remain in that forever.
So Rachel, do you get to talk to a lot of pastors and have these conversations? Are they able to feel comfortable with you? Does that happen much?
Oh, yeah, all the time. And sadly, a lot of times the conversation goes something like, I really want to do that. I'm just scared. Or, oh, I'm kind of afraid of my own congregation, which really breaks my heart. And I often hear from pastors who say, I am doubting everything I once believed about God, and I cannot tell a soul.
Yeah.
And it just, that is so lonely and so isolating to feel that way. And yet I've always been very encouraged by pastors who are honest about that reality in their lives.
Right.
But I think it's important to say that a church with that type of leader and that type of pastor, that type of community, might not look successful on the outside.
Right.
I mean, if we're modeling our churches after the ministry of Jesus, and if we're modeling our leadership after the way Jesus served, like, that's going to produce fruit of the Spirit, you know, love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, goodness, faithfulness, gentleness, and self-control. There's no promise that it'll produce mass amounts of followers.
Yeah, or get featured
in
the magazines.
Like, somebody who's promising to solve all of your life's problems with a book and 10 steps, like, that's always going to be probably more appealing to people. And that's always going to draw a crowd. But
like Joel Osteen.
That's not
really
what we're called to do. Yeah, right. But that's not what we're really called to do as Christians. We're just called to break bread, baptize sinners, preach the word.
Let me ask
you. Anoint the sick, and then whatever happens, happens.
Yeah.
You know, so if we are less invested in measuring success by how many people show up, I think maybe we would create healthier cultures.
That feels so refreshing, because what you're saying is the responsibility isn't on us to make them Christians. It's just to live like Christ.
Yeah.
That feels so relief.
Yeah.
So much relief's in that, what you're saying.
Yeah, just do what we're supposed to do. It's not really rocket science.
You know what's funny is you say that?
People.
This week, I was reading through some of the Gospels. Well, the last few weeks, I've been reading through some of the Gospels, and it is really funny. If you look at Jesus so many times, like, it's really funny if you hear about, you know, these big theological debates and these big, you know, this or premillennialism, whatever, blah, 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 every possible thing. But Jesus is just like, listen, just love your neighbor like you love yourself. Like, he's just saying, like he's saying the simplest possible. Like, he's not going into big stuff about how he was resurrected, all this stuff. He's just like, hey, just forgive people like I'm forgiving. like he really does think we're like kids, and we cannot get that simplest idea. Like, it is really hard to go simple.
Yeah. Well, because it's like it's simple, but it's also really hard.
Yeah.
Like, loving your neighbor, yeah, especially when your neighbor is like, you know, a conservative, Bible-thumping, gun-toting,
right,
Republican. You know, that's different. That's a little harder for me to just love that neighbor. And it's hard to love your enemies. It's hard to serve and to be patient and to forgive. And all this stuff it's hard to do. It's simple, but it's hard. And
Rachel,
so sometimes we build all these sort of theological systems and all of these mental exercises around it, all this sort of esoteric debate to kind of avoid the simplicity of it. I know that's what I do. That's like, yeah, a habit I have, is like I intellectualize it to keep myself from having to just suck it up and do it.
Yeah. So when you're like, if you're on an airplane with someone, they find out that you're a Christian, do you almost feel
that,
like,
doesn't happen because I put my headphones on. I'm an introvert and I'm terrified of being strapped next to somebody
who
talks to me about religion. Are you kidding me? No.
So let me set up a fictitious scenario. So someone finds out you're a Christian. Do you have like this feeling where you're just like, I don't want to just say, yes, I'm a Christian, because of all the baggage that comes with, I've got to kind of explain myself a little bit more?
Oh, sometimes, but I've kind of let that go. I mean, yeah, I mean, I don't feel like I have to couch it or anything like that. I think most people actually are pretty drawn to and intrigued by the person of Jesus. I've never felt embarrassed to identify myself as a follower of Jesus, because I think most people share the feeling that Jesus is a compelling and important figure who had something very true to say to humanity. Now, where people fall on his divinity and all of that stuff might be different, but I guess I've never shied too much away from having conversations with people about why I follow Jesus. The more difficult conversation is why I'm still part of the church, when church has done so much wounding and can be so cruel, and when so many people have been hurt by church. But that's a conversation I think that's worth having as well. But it's a more difficult conversation.
How about
I would certainly not bring up on an airplane.
Yeah. Have you been hurt? Have you been hurt by the church? Like, when, I mean, you can just Google. I mean, there's like John Piper writes about your Year of Biblical Womanhood book and is not too happy with it. I mean, are those sorts of things hurtful?
They can be when I feel like I've been completely misrepresented. I understand, yeah, people disagreeing with me. That's fine. But when people say things like, well, clearly she hates the Bible, or,
yeah,
clearly she's not an Orthodox Christian, it's like, really? It's, you know, it's just like not really representative of me. And so that's frustrating. Or when people don't bother to read a book and,
right,
they still write super negative reviews of it. Or, I mean, I have even had people write and publish negative reviews of my books while I was still writing them. Like, they weren't turned into the publisher yet. It's like a precog review.
Precog review. I like that.
So tell us about Searching for Sunday.
Yeah, it's hurtful, but I haven't been hurt. I've had a mostly positive experience with church, but I know of other people, and many of my friends and loved ones have had much more difficult experiences with church, where they've been kicked out of a community because they got divorced or because they were gay, and that's not something that you just get over.
Yeah, yeah,
and
right.
So I've had some minor flesh wounds, I guess you could say, but I know of so many people who have suffered so much more, and so I never, ever, ever want to create the idea that going back or joining another faith community would be easy for those folks, or should happen right away. Some people need like a time away to heal and to recover and kind of detox. So yeah, like, I've been hurt, certainly. I don't know anybody who has been a part of the church who hasn't in some way been hurt by a community of Christians or by another Christian.
Yeah.
But I haven't been hurt the way that some other folks have been hurt, especially folks from the LGBT community, who I've had the privilege to get to know in the last few years. And yeah, that's a much more difficult circumstance for a lot of those folks.
Are people now trying to just lap you into that group now? Like that's what I'm saying. Do people now say, oh, well, now she is just a liberal or emerging church person that, you know, when they question that, are you feel like you're getting pigeonholed any at all now because of some of the things you've written about or talked about now?
Oh, yeah. Then it's so funny because it's like, I mean, the headlines are things like Rachel Held Evans ditches evangelicalism for mainline Protestant. It's just like, or, you know, it's so funny because it's like, you don't just ditch the tradition you were raised in. You can't.
Right.
I don't think you can just leave behind evangelicalism. There's so much I love about evangelicalism. It's like my religious language. I think I will always speak it, you know? So there's this tendency to really want to slap labels on people when it comes to their faith. And most of us, though, don't fit perfectly under that label. So yeah, I go to an Episcopal church, but I haven't been confirmed. I'm kind of dumb about Episcopal theology. I'm just now learning about it. Like, I'm not a perfect Episcopalian just because, like, I wasn't a perfect evangelical, and I kind of think of myself as a mix of both. And then I like to take a little bit of Lutheranism and a little bit of Catholicism, and I don't think there's anything that wrong with that. Like, people call it cafeteria Christianity, but frankly, I kind of dig the cafeteria. Like, I don't see why we can't appreciate what's good and beautiful and inspiring about various expressions of Christianity. Like, I don't think any of us have kind of the lockbox on absolute truth on this. I feel like I can learn something from just about every church I visit and just about every faith community I visit. So yeah, I don't know. You after a while, you just let all the labeling go and know that, you know, I have people in my life who know what kind of Christian I am. I'm not going to wait for John Piper or somebody to give me the thumbs up.
Right. Does that, what do you say to people that when they would say that cafeteria mentality, they say, oh, you're just picking and choosing the stuff you like, and you're just making your faith about you. Like, are you saying, you're not saying that is what I'm hearing. What you're saying is you're finding beauty and a relationship with Christ in all those things and not just going, oh, well, this is it. I just go to this church or this church and that's my religion. Is that, I mean, what do you say to that?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly it. And I mean, I don't even have too much trouble with the pick and choose language. I mean, I think we all, to some degree, pick and choose.
Yeah.
Like, we pick and choose which parts of scripture we tend to place more emphasis on. We pick and choose what sort of worship style we prefer. Like, that's just part of being human and part of being in a culture where you have such luxury of choice is to sort of, you know, take a little bit of what you like from one tradition and another, something from what you like in another, and internalize that and appreciate that. And so, I mean, it's not really something I think can be avoided. And people who say they don't do it, I think, are just not really being honest with themselves. So it's like, you know, I can read Calvin and appreciate a ton of what Calvin said, especially about sacraments. I love what Calvin had to say about sacraments. But I'm not going to buy everything he said and did about, you know, Reformed theology or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Like, we can go through the world sort of discounting a person entirely because of one thing that they say or believe that we don't agree with, or we can still think of them as somebody who might teach us something and try to learn something from them.
Yeah,
so that's kind of how I approach traditions, different Christian traditions, is I think each one has something to teach us, and as long as we're open to learning from it.
Yeah, I was telling Matt and Toby, I find myself looking at, all right, so let's take John Calvin and then let's take Billy Graham. If one of those guys are right, the other guy is totally, totally full of it, and they have no idea what they're talking about. And I'm not willing to say, okay, John Calvin is completely 100% messed up, or Billy Graham is completely 100% messed up. I think what that shows us, though, is we all have this snippet, glimpse of everything that there is to know. And I really do think, I was telling my brother last night, I think that when we die and we go to heaven, I really feel we're going to be like, oh my gosh, I just knew such a tiny amount. I mean, maybe less than 1%. I think our eyes are going to be open to, oh my gosh, like, there's just so much stuff out there that I did not know.
Yeah, it's totally about humility, just having that posture of humility and teachability. And I try to have that.
Yeah.
And I think I've gotten better at it in my 30s than I was
yourself
when I had it all figured out. So
I think that scares a lot of people, though. A lot of people, if you get to that point, it's just like, okay, well, then what do you believe? What don't you believe? And isn't that threatening other people? Like, I'm sure you've heard this before. We've gotten this, you know, when we're asking questions on, you know, our podcast and, you know, entertaining doubts and all that stuff. I mean, we've had people ask, well, you need to take responsibility for your listeners. Like, you've got impressionable people that you could be leading astray. Do you ever get that?
See, I hate that, because it assumes that all your listeners are stupid.
Like, right, right.
That they can't use, like, their own discretion and wisdom as they're listening to what you have to say. I hate it when people say that to me about my readers, because it's like, hey, don't insult my readers. Right. I'm really protective of them.
And
like, whatever, dude.
Yeah, and like Toby says, I think it really minimizes the strength of Jesus. I mean, that's something that I think Toby keeps us on track a lot, because he's just like, man, what's wrong with people? Isn't Jesus strong enough to really be the loudest voice in people's ears? We're not those people, you know?
Yeah, yeah. One is just like, I'm very suspicious of folks who, especially young folks, who have decided that they have God all figured out. That just seems like, gosh, where is the adventure in that?
Right.
The quest and the search and, you know, I don't know. I used to think that I had to be that way. I really did. And it was heartbreaking and frustrating and super duper scary to let go of this notion that I could figure God all out and that God could be summed up in a few propositional statements about what I believed. And that was that. Uh-huh. That was a hard thing to let go of, because there's a lot of security in that, in thinking that you've got this figured out. You've got it nailed. And then there's a lot of insecurity in going out in life and saying, well, maybe I don't. Maybe there's still more that I could learn. Maybe I'm wrong about some of this stuff. So for me, it's about the difference between holding all of your beliefs with a clenched fist, desperately hanging on to them, and then holding them with an open hand in a posture of surrender. Because sometimes God has to change your mind about some things. And I want to be open to, if I'm wrong about stuff, being changed about them.
Yeah.
It's a much scarier way to live, but I can't imagine living any other way.
Since you've started blogging, has there been something that has really changed? Like, what was Rachel, you know, like 5 years ago? Is there a thing that you've been like, oh man, I said this then, this is where I'm at now. Mm-hmm. Is any big things like that happened to you?
Yeah, quite a few. And one thing, this will be shocking to people. one thing that I think more recently that I've come to understand better is, I used to just get really frustrated with Reformed theology in general, because a lot of the folks who sort of were deeply critical of me, and sometimes frankly kind of mean to me, yeah, were of the sort of hyper Calvinist sort. But in the last few years, I've, as I've encountered folks who hold a Reformed view of the world and of theology, I've realized just how much deeper and wider that tradition is, and how there's a lot to value in it. So, you know, I even read a little bit of Calvin, believe it or not, and I was like, hey, I like what this guy has to say about baptism and communion. And,
yeah,
you know, so it's like, that's one thing that I think I've shifted. My attitude has certainly changed. I still disagree with the hard line 5-point folks, but I don't know. I don't see them as the enemy so much anymore. I don't know how they feel about me, but so that's something I've kind of just softened on, you know, a little bit and changed my views on. And then of course, you know, having grown up in the Bible Belt and in a very conservative evangelical culture, I used to think that evolution was, you know, fake, and climate change wasn't real, and,
yeah,
and all that kind of stuff. And I've obviously had some progressions or changes in how I view science and faith.
Well, hey, so you're friends, you're buddies with Science Mike and Michael Gunger and them, right?
Oh my gosh, I love those guys. They are like my favorite people.
Yeah, they're really
interesting. I mean, besides you all.
Well, I listen to Science Mike a lot. I want to recommend that other people do too. I think he's really interesting. But it's a very similar thing. I don't know. Something he's been saying a lot is he'll refer to himself as a mystic. And I know that's not a super common way that people that you would hear from often would say, but does that resonate with you, that term mystic? and the way he looks at science and all those things.
Yeah, smarter than I view myself. Like, mystics strike me as people who are, like, disciplined in their career life. Yeah. So, I don't know. That doesn't quite fit. I mean, I'm a mystic if that means, like, shrugging your shoulders every now and then and being like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much of this I know. Then sure, I'm totally a mystic. But I'll leave it to Mike to talk about mysticism. Yep. Also, frankly, I'll be honest, when women identify themselves as mystics, people tend to write them off.
That's true.
I bet so.
It sounds a lot fruitier coming from a woman to a lot of people.
Rachel, how do you
mystic, she's a witch.
Yeah, right.
Right, exactly. <That's> right.
Yeah, the man is like this solemn mystic guy who's wise. Yeah. And the woman is a witch.
Right, you she's think as this like aesthetic, disciplined man. Yeah. And then a woman is like, oh, she's mystic. Crazy. Yeah. Throw her in the lake. Yeah.
Rachel, one thing that I've really been doing some soul searching with, I'm curious. I think I know a little bit where you're at with this, but do you read Paul's stuff and the other epistles differently than you read the Gospels as far as the weightiness that you put on it?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I don't know about the weightiness. It's more just kind of understanding how it all unfolded. I mean, for instance, just knowing even that the epistles were written before the Gospels is kind of an interesting thing to consider.
Right.
I mean, it's like I think what I try to emphasize in my thinking on scripture is what a lot of people call a Christ-centered hermeneutic, and that's the idea that we read the rest of scripture through the lens of Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Or, maybe a better way of putting it, is that scripture was fulfilled in the person of Jesus Christ. And so if we want to know what biblical looks like, we look at Jesus. Like, Jesus is living, breathing, walking around, eating, sneezing, laughing, example of what it looks like to believe the Bible. And he is the fulfillment of Scripture's entire purpose. So where we have questions on interpretation, where we have disagreements in what our posture ought to be, I think we look to Christ to see, what does this look like in the flesh?
Yep.
What does the Word look like when it has become flesh? So it's sort of like thinking of Jesus as sort of the ultimate revelation of God, the ultimate expression of what God is like.
So
it's not so much that, I put the Gospels ahead of the Epistles or the Old Testament. It's more like I read the rest of that and engage the rest of that through the lens of Christ. And I think the Epistles are just that. It's the Apostle Paul and Peter and James and some of the others trying to figure out, okay, so what does community look like?
Right.
After Jesus? Like, how in the world do we be the people of God now that we've had this major revelation about what God is like? And so a lot of it's very practical stuff. Like, can we eat with people we never ate with before? That was the big question. Like, do we eat the same things that Gentiles eat? And do we eat with Gentiles? That was a huge question. And so I look to the epistles as sort of like an example of the first Christians figuring out what it means to follow Jesus, like,
right,
practically. And so in that sense, I really have come to love and appreciate them in a new way recently.
Yeah, so a lot of critics would say, as far as like infallibility, Rachel Held Evans can't see the Word in that way because of your views on LGBT and Paul's teachings on women teachers is pretty straightforward. I mean, I know that is hours of worth of conversation, but how do you deal with some of those passages that some people would say, no, that completely contradicts what Rachel is espousing?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I would say is that, like, those folks who disagree with me about like women's ordination, I think we both take the Bible seriously. We both believe it's authoritative in Christian life. We just disagree on how to interpret it. So it's not like it's such a weak and lazy argument to respond to somebody who disagrees with your interpretation of scripture with, well, it's too bad you don't believe the Bible. It's
right.
Like, oh, come on. Yeah. It's such a shortcut.
Being
like,
that the everybody to some degree is everybody's interpreting. And like you said earlier, everybody is picking and choosing and placing certain weight on certain things and making determinations there. So to say that just because someone's is different than yours, whether it be looser or tighter, to say that they're misrepresenting it is a cheat. Really.
Right. Like, I could so easily turn around and respond with, all right, well, Paul was pretty straightforward about women covering their heads. So where are the head coverings in your church? You know, like right. if we're going to talk about straightforward right. or plain reading.
Well,
like,
they would have an argument for that, folks. But they'd be missing the bigger point. Essentially, you know, like they'd say, yeah, but that's because, but what they're still saying is, but my hermeneutic, my whatever, my version of it is airtight, basically. And I would like to always say to those people, no matter what, there's somebody farther, like you're looking this down the line this way at somebody saying, well, you're being too loose with that. You're not doing this right. You're in sin because of this. You're trying to read into this. And there's somebody behind, if you turned around, you'd find somebody more uptight than you that thinking the same thing about you. So it's not always right, better to just be the more conservative, for instance. That's not a value. It's just, you know, it's this, everybody's on the scale somewhere.
Right. And let's keep in mind that during the Civil War, half of the defenses of slavery were written by clergy members who were quoting scripture and saying that we can't abide these abolitionists who clearly don't take the Bible seriously because right. the Bible says slaves obey your masters. So yeah. like just being super certain that your opinion is right doesn't make it more right. So it's yeah, to me, it's like, let's start with the presupposition that, you know, if these are the folks you're having a conversation with, that we take the Bible seriously, that we consider it an authority in Christian life. Okay, we'll start there. And now let's talk about the actual texts in question and not just assassinate one another's character and question one another's motives.
Well,
and
that,
so then it gets way more interesting. You know, and then we're talking about the Greek and the Hebrew that's used. And we're talking about, like, what was the culture like at the time? And how might that be affecting things? And why do we take the head covering thing as not counting anymore, but the, you know, wives submit to your husband. Why do we count, for instance, wives submit to your husbands every single time that instruction is issued in the epistles? It is either preceded or followed by slaves obey your masters. So why does one apply and one doesn't? Like, that's, to me, is interesting. Like, talking about why we pick and choose and why we interpret the way we interpret is way more interesting to me than just accusing one another of picking and choosing and deceiving ourselves into thinking that we don't do that.
Well, how about this, though?
It's a way more productive conversation.
You and we, I agree with you very much, but you seem to say that people should be less convinced about how correct they are about stuff. So if somebody that's a more conservative and uptight than you or I, we both would say, well, that they should maybe loosen up or keep that in an open hand. Is that also, would you also say that on some of the issues that you maybe care about? Like, let's say the LGBT issue, maybe, are you open-handed? Like, yeah, you might just be wrong about that. Like,
oh, yeah. If we don't have that posture of I might be wrong, like, I don't know. That is a very – the notion that I am right about everything that I believe and nobody can change my mind, oh, that's super scary. I never want to be that kind of person. But I think those types of people can be really dangerous, frankly. It's not that that means, therefore, that you don't hold your views with conviction. Mm-hmm. I think it's really important to hold your views with conviction and be able to argue for them and articulate them and make compelling cases for them. I support that entirely. But if we go through life thinking that we can never be wrong, how much will we miss out on of God just surprising us with new information and new ideas and new ways of looking at the world?
To be open-handed for you could look like saying, yeah, like, is that a statement you make? Like, yeah, I since I'm open-handed about these issues, I have to admit we may have just given women way too many liberties up to this point. Like, I'm open-handed about that. I can't hang on to it because I might be wrong.
That's a little tough for me to say as a feminist right now. But
hey,
you're trying to get a little soundbite to put at the front of the podcast. I think it's very possible women have been given way too many freedoms in that culture.
The horse is out of the barn.
What would you say to
I think you have to be open.
What would you say to
the fact that you could be wrong, but, you know, but that doesn't mean that you sort of, like, have to tone down your own convictions in any way. I mean, I'm pretty convicted about certain things, but then there are other things that I'm less convicted about, you know, like details and you know, there's some things that are more important than others. And I think that's perfectly reasonable to say that, like, for instance, issues of justice and how our fellow human beings are treated, that's important stuff. That's worth fighting over. That's worth debating with intensity and passion and conviction.
Agreed.
You know, whereas little finer points of theology, I don't know why we get so wound up on some of that stuff.
So what would you say to people that say, well, Rachel, it sounds like you are putting the Bible in the judgment seat where it should be the other way around?
Oh, the Bible putting... When people like, yeah, I don't know. I don't even know how to respond to that. Because it's like this notion that we can read the Bible without interpreting it is just really fascinating to me. Like, I don't know. Like, show me how that is done.
Right.
You know, like, so when people say, well, I just obey the Bible. I just read it. I don't interpret it. Or I don't bring my own presuppositions and worldview to the text. Yeah, I have a really hard time understanding that. I think it's super important that we approach Scripture with the humility, enough humility to say, obviously, my culture, my gender, my background, my socioeconomic status, my race, all of these things affect how I read and interpret Scripture. I can't just float out of myself when I'm engaging the Bible. And I don't think we're meant to. It's just, the experience is so much more enriching when we surround ourselves with people who are different than ourselves and get their take on Scripture. So yeah, it's not about sitting in judgment of the Bible. It's just being realistic about the fact that when I read the Bible, I read the Bible as Rachel.
Right.
And that I'm not this completely objective, unimpressed person who can just go to the Bible, take the divine truth from it, and walk away. It's, you know, and I think that's beautiful that God invites us into conversation with God and with one another around a text that is endlessly interesting and endlessly fascinating and complex and layered. And there's to me, it's a much richer view of Scripture to think that it is has so much to teach us.
I agree with you.
We don't have it all together when we approach the text, or we're not completely objective. So, yeah, that's, I don't know.
I agree.
It's crazy how these conversations, I mean, it's like, it's crazy when how some folks sort of imagine themselves to be so objective. I don't really understand how, I just don't understand how you can read the Bible without interpreting it.
Now, would you,
obviously, I have my own interpretation. Like, that's just.
Would you be okay? Would you be okay with saying, "Yeah, I think maybe some things in the Bible are wrong," or would you have to say, "Yeah, I think we're interpreting wrong," or are you okay with, "Yeah, I think some of the stuff in the Bible is wrong, and we need to figure that out"?
I think it's like the problem is we have such an Enlightenment view of the Bible, like based view of the Bible in Western culture, that it's like if people think that if, like, for instance, Genesis 1 and 2, if that's not science, it's wrong. And I think that's a really shallow way of looking at the text. Like, I think that Genesis 1 and 2 were written in an ancient Near Eastern culture with an ancient Near Eastern view of cosmology. Now, we have a more modern view of cosmology. That doesn't mean that, like, oh, Genesis 1 and 2 are wrong. It just means they were operating within a different set of presuppositions and paradigms. And it's like, the message still gets through, but, you know, most of us today don't believe that the stars are stuck in a glassy firmament above the earth, or that, you know, the earth is held up by pillars.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean that, oh, the Bible is wrong. It just means that, like, God, for whatever reason, beautifully decides to speak to us in our own language and with our own worldview and with our own cosmology, and that this is what God always does. God always stoops down to us. At us at our level and talks to us like his children. And I think that's really beautiful. Instead of saying, well, the only way Genesis 1 and 2 can be important or true is if it's science. I think it's just that's a misunderstanding the genre of those texts, I think. So, yeah, it's not like I would say, oh, Scripture's wrong. It's more like, well, I would say that interpreting Genesis 1 and 2, insisting that they be science and that they line up with modern scientific findings, is an unfair expectation to place on a text.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
We wanted to kind of transition too into talking about your new book. And it seems to me, and I might be wrong here, but it seems like you might almost even be drawn to more mainline church style, and just talking, you know, just you even saying taking a little bit from churches. I don't know if you avoid more non-denominational mega church stuff, but it sounds like you really do appreciate the tradition and some of the things that mainline churches offer. I wonder, is that, if you can start in just a little bit about that, and what is your journey when you say, you know, searching for Sunday or whatever?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think so. I think just in recent years, I've been really drawn to the sacraments as sort of a way of expressing what it means to be part of the church. And especially for me, communion has become really important to me in how I think about church and how I worship. And I'm not saying that everybody has to go to an Episcopal church to have a good communion, but the
right.
Episcopal church sure knows how to do it right. And so I really have just been drawn to sort of that the process of coming to the table every single Sunday with the table being the center of worship, not the pastor or a sermon. The climax of an Episcopal worship service is gathering around the table. And so it's kind of nice because I never get to leave church saying I haven't been fed. Every single week I'm fed by Christ and the bread and the wine. And so there's just something really appealing to me about that. And so Searching for Sunday is a book about struggling with church, really wrestling with church and not wanting to go to church, frankly, because of how I'd been hurt, how others had been hurt, and also because of my own cynicism and my own sin. And it's a book about struggling through that and eventually finding my way back to church. And I arrange it around the imagery of seven sacraments. So I'm not really making a theological point about these sacraments. I just appreciate the imagery. So I talk about baptism and confession, holy orders, communion, confirmation, anointing the sick, and marriage as practices that are present in just about every church tradition and faith community that I think really point us to the person of Christ and to the kingdom.
Do you love writing? Is that your favorite thing to do, is writing books and blogging and those things?
Oh, gosh, yes. When I was in third grade, I dressed up as an author for career day. Okay. It was like a little bun in my hair and little glasses on my nose, and I carried a little legal pad around. But see, if I had known, I would have just worn my pajamas, because like what you actually wear as a writer. It's your pajamas.
So career-wise, it's not a step or anything. Like, do you see yourself more of a speaker? Would you want to be on TV or have a... Well, I mean, like,
writing books is the highest
thing for you?
TV is the worst thing. No, I just want to write books. That's really, and I enjoy speaking from time to time. That's kind of a cool way to connect with readers and, you know, actually see people face to face, which I think is important for authors to do now and then. But my heart has always been for writing. I love to write. It's the only thing I'm good at. I basically suck at everything else. So it's a good thing I've learned to make a living at this. And it's a complete joy. I love it. I mean, it's hard. And sometimes there's late nights and, you know, you kind of drive yourself a little bit crazy when you're on deadline and you're way behind and all that kind of stuff. But I love the process. And I think this book, I feel like it reveals some maturity in my writing. And that's another thing I love about writing, is that you can always get better. Always. There's always room to grow. There's no real lid on it. And I love that. You never master it. And so I feel like each book I've gotten to be a slightly better writer than the last. And that's a wonderful feeling, to feel like you've put out your best writing that you know how to do, and still knowing though that you can be better. I love it. It's just such a gift.
Do you have ambition to write?
Absolutely honored to do it.
Do you have Do you have ambition to write outside of Christianity ever, or do you think this is your niche and this is what you want to stick to? And
I often think about trying a novel, but I don't know. You have to really know what you're doing to write a novel. So that's kind of like I've got a little notebook that's like novel ideas.
Uh-huh.
And I visit it every few months and I'm like, yeah, I'm totally going to do this. And then it gets a little daunting. So maybe down the road, I'm open to all sorts of possibilities.
So yeah, that's what I was going to ask is too. Do you ever just like kind of feel like, damn it, I wish I didn't always have to write about Christianity. Like, it'd be awesome just to write a movie critic review of Avengers or something like, because I work at a church, I do Bad Christian, I'm in bands that, you know, are considered Christian, and sometimes I'm just like, man, I would love to just talk about anything else. Like, I feel like it's so much, I'm always talking about God to a point where I feel like sometimes it just gets like
rote. Like a detriment almost to your spirituality.
Yeah, like,
right?
There's times where I'm like, man, I would love it if just somebody just asked me, you know, something else. Anything else. I have other things too that will glorify God, but let's just talk a little bit. Do you ever feel that way?
Oh my gosh, all the time. And I love hearing you all say that you feel that way too, because it's like, whew, I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels this way sometimes. Where, I mean, I get like truckloads of books coming to my house, and they're all Christian books. You know? And sometimes it's great because there'll be like a cool like commentary tucked in there, and I'm like, yeah, Baker Books, thanks for the commentary, because I like that kind of stuff. But like sometimes I just feel like, oh my gosh, I'm just writing what everybody else is writing. It's endless. So yeah. The way I kind of address that and for myself is that like when I have a choice, like I don't actually read that many Christian books. I read some. I want to stay kind of in on what people are talking about. And I've got some favorite writers sort of in the Christian publishing world, like Don Miller, who I'm going to read everything the man writes, you know, so, and Walter Brueggemann and that sort of thing. And some of the theologians that I really appreciate. So there's some that I always read, but I spend a lot of time consuming music and TV and podcasts and, I mean, with the exception, of course, of Bad Christian, that are focused on something else, like, you know, completely unrelated.
Well, tell
topics.
Us, people really always like ask for podcast science. Recommendations. Will you tell people what you listen to?
What podcast I listen
yeah,
to?
Yeah, people always want to know that.
Really? Okay. Well, I really enjoy the Slate Culture Gabfest. Have you ever listened to that one?
Yep.
It's so good. Yes. Okay. It's just like the three people talking about culture. I love it. And it's like rarely are they talking about anything religion. Mm-hmm. So I dig it. And of course, I listen to This American Life and what's that spinoff? The
Serial?
Oh, I care. Oh, well, Serial, of course. Everybody listened to Serial. That was crazy. No, shoot. I can't remember the name.
Invisibilia?
Yes, Invisibilia. Yeah. Thank you. Invisibilia. I also love, if I am in the mood for spirituality stuff, but not Christian stuff, I love On Being with Krista Trippett. That's an amazing show, amazing program. And, you know, you get to hear from Buddhists and poets. And so it's about spirituality, but it's not, you don't hear a lot of evangelical lingo, you know. I feel like that's what I have to break away from.
Right.
In order to keep, you know, not to go crazy and also to become a better writer is to get out of the sort of evangelical lingo world.
You handle it fine. You handle it way better than me. I in order for me to keep my brain, I just go sin and do bad stuff. Like I yell out the car window that I'm going to kill people. I go steal some stuff from Walmart. I'm just mean.
Drink and drive.
He's not exaggerating at all.
I just do that, and then I'm like, okay, now I can ask for forgiveness. I need God again. I got to get back in. So you do a way better job of handling
it
than
above.
Me.
I'm not above a very very tall glass of wine and a few episodes of Game of Thrones, so I get it.
So Rachel, you want to tell us about your speaking tour that you and Mark Driscoll are doing here in the next couple weeks? Hey, this is really awesome. What's the best way for people to, is Amazon the best route to get Searching for Sunday? And I mean, a year.
Oh, well, whatever they want to do. Like if they want to go support an independent bookstore, go support an independent bookstore. It's at Barnes & Noble and it's on
RachelHeldEvans.com. I mean, they can go right to your website. I'm
RachelHeldEvans.com. It's just about everywhere except for Lifeway. I have been banned from Lifeway. So.
Banned from Lifeway. Wow. That's cool.
That's awesome. You should be proud of yourself,
that's
Rachel.
That's pretty badass.
I kind of wanted to go in the other day and be like, go into an actual store and be like, hi, my books have been banned from your store. Does that mean that I am also like physically banned from your store? But then I thought, it's really not the sales association.
That would have been awesome to see on the news, Rachel Held Evans being dragged, like, drug out of a Lifeway. No!
That'd be great.
I just need WWJD bracelets. Please let me in.
So you have a biblical year of womanhood. I hope I'm not saying that wrong. And then what? You have a couple other books, correct?
Yeah. The first book was originally titled Evolving in Monkey Town, but it got retitled. Faith Unraveled is my first book. And then the second book is A Year of Biblical Womanhood,
awesome.
Which is the one that got me banned from Lifeway. And then the third book is
It was just disgusting. It was filthy and so much profanity and bad stuff, right? They just couldn't handle it.
No, well, the debate was over. I used the word vagina.
Oh, no.
Oh, my Lord.
You used the scientific
term. I tell you what.
And then also, I think it could also have been my just general support for women in ministry, which Lifeway rather vehemently opposes.
Well, that's
so
confirmation,
I don't know whether
fellas.
It was.
We can't get our t-shirts into Lifeway.
Yeah. Anyway.
Well, you're a big
Twitter
person, so I imagine
ask for it.
I imagine you would like people to follow your Twitter. That seems to be a place that you're really active, so that's probably a good way to find out anything they want to know from you would just be to interact with you on Twitter.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit meaner on Twitter, I think.
That's good. That's what I like.
Twitter brings out this the like sort of the snippiness.
Got to get to the point.
Yes, Twitter. Twitter handle's Rachel Held Evans. On Facebook, I'm Rachel Held Evans. My blog is rachelheldevans.com. So it's really, it's if you know my name, you can
it's
find
it. It's not hard.
Stuff.
That's right.
You and your husband have any kids?
Nope. It's just the two of us living here in Dayton, Tennessee, and we love it.
How long have y'all been married?
11 years.
Dang. Nice.
Congratulations on that 11 years. That's great.
It's funny. My wife always picks on me for not asking those questions, and it come to find out, I really am interested. It's just, I guess, I'm more interested in other stuff. Either way, I get help from my wife. So,
is he a writer as well, or does he do anything? What does he do?
Oh,
for them?
No. He does like all the tech stuff.
Okay.
Like he helps like with the blog. Basically, he runs the blog is what he does, and all of my tech stuff. And then he's got his own projects. Like he's got a web startup, and he flips houses, and he's got a video business, like video production business. But we're both self-employed, which is great. So
That's
we both
awesome.
Work from home.
That's
yeah,
awesome.
it's fantastic. Most of the time. Occasionally, it'll be like, this feels like a hostile workplace. But
yeah.
Most of the time, it's great.
Do your blogs ever cause any tension with you two? Like, you ever come home and he goes, I saw what you wrote today.
Oh, that's awesome. No, not really. I mean, because he is a super, super Rachel fan. Like, he's a Rachel fan, but he's not, like, impressed, which
yeah.
is perfect. You need that person in your life who's,
totally.
Like, super supportive, encourages you, always got your back. But then, like, if you start to get too big ahead, they're
right.
like, yeah, you're not that cool.
yeah, that you're right. So, that is so needed for sure. So,
oh, yes. You got to have those people in your life.
Well, thanks for this hour of pouring into us, Rachel. We really appreciate it. It's been you've blessed
well,
us big time.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, this was great. we actually, Matt does a podcast called Break It Down, and he's going to be doing some stuff in the future. But I would love to hear more. I really am interested in, like, the writing process and hear how you write and like the craft of that.
Yeah.
So if we could ever have you back on there, maybe a months from now or whatever, but I would like to hear that. Cause I think that's really interesting. Even like your idea of like the insurmountable novel or something like that. I think people are really mm-hmm. interested in not only like, cause like what you said, this really, neat to me is you said there is no lid to writing and like you actually care about the craft too. Like you care, you're honoring God with your word and you're talking about Christianity and faith and your journey and all that stuff. But there is actually a process to that too, that is an art and that you actually work hard to improve. So I think that's really neat. But anyway, thank you so much
That'd
for joining
super
us.
Super fun to talk about. Yeah, yeah. Well, it was great to talk with some folks with accents that are familiar to me and
yeah.
and I really appreciate the good conversation.
All right. Yeah. This is Rachel Held Evans. Check out her new book, Searching for Sunday. Thank you so much, Rachel. We'll talk to you soon.
It was a pleasure.
All right. That was Rachel Held Evans. Now, I want to tell you what, that was, I love it when people, and I don't think she would even say this about herself, but she just has a confidence in not being confident or not being, you know what I mean? Like, it's
that's
like,
perfect.
She knows who she is, and that's okay that she doesn't know who she is.
Right.
What does she say? Introvert. She says introverty writer type. Is that the deal?
Yeah, yeah.
Writers are greatly, greatly benefited by being introverted. That's why I just can't make myself write blogs or want to work on a book for us, because this is so much better to me.
She's definitely one of my favorite interviewees. I thought that was just a great conversation. It's funny because I don't know. Edit that.
what just happened?
I lost my
train
of thought.
Did you get emotional? Or did you get?
No, I lost my. I was gonna go into how this time 3 years ago I probably would have never read her stuff. But
hey, that is something. I mean, for sure. Like I was going back listening to the best of the 100th episode. Man, I really laughed a lot out loud.
Yeah,
I was actually at the gym and I was just laughing out loud. It was really funny, but Logan said that about how we used to not cuss because we loved Jesus so much.
Yeah. You know, we're just so into God.
Yeah, we're just so into God. And I just thought, you know what? I do want to allow grace for people figuring it out, even if they're on the wrong side of that right now. Like being against whatever sin they want to be against and this and being a hard, super conservative Christian or a right winger or even on the left side that out there too. Like I just... Everybody does have a journey, and I guess I hate saying respect
well,
it, but
it?
I mean, you kind of have to a little bit because, I mean, people are just trying to figure things out. I am definitely not the same guy I was a long time ago.
Oh, that's true.
I'm for sure, I remember thinking cussing was really bad and that people that did it were sinning and might go to hell.
I would have thought that Rachel Held Evans was on the bad side not too long ago, for sure. Me personally, yeah. So I get that.
Yeah, I mean, I want people to understand what we're doing. You might not be there, and you might not ever be, but you might be. So just take it a day at a time and get there. And so that was a little bit of truth. And now I think we need
that
some
was a little
real.
Truth. Now big truth.
We need big ass truth right now. In a world where the most important time in your walk with the creator of all things could in fact be this news podcast. My name is Toby Morrell, and this is the Damn News. Yeah, I do want to say that. The most important thing
moment.
For a Christian,
most important,
most
moment.
Important event, a moment and event of the week is this news. Right now,
mm-hmm.
It's going to change your life.
Is.
It's going to give you truth. It's going to open your eyes to
big
the
ass
world.
Truth.
And you, if you're not saved, you will be saved at the end of this.
When little truth won't do it, and you need some big ass truth, is the damn
news. I'm like Creflo. I'm not gonna dream small.
Mm-mm.
Every person listening to this news will be saved by the Lord Jesus Christ at the end of the news. By the end of the news.
And if there's another,
I'm not going to believe smaller.
And if there's another universe out there, you getting saved too.
Yeah.
Then we're going to have to get a bigger,
what kind of
we're going to have to get a stronger Wi-Fi signal. So give it a
That would have been so awesome if he'd have said that. And if they find out there's multiverse, then we going to go there too.
He did. He said we'd get a spaceship is what he's going to ask for.
No, he's talking about if there's life on other planets.
Oh, yeah.
I'm talking about what if there's actually a multiverse.
If there's a multiverse, we're going to find a wormhole.
You find a soul in the black hole, I'm headed there. That was so awesome. Golly.
He's great.
If you're gonna go out big, boy. I mean, seriously, that was so awesome.
I mean, talk about confident in your confidence.
I know. Good Lord, I love that. I'd love to have him on the podcast.
Oh, my God.
He never would, yeah, I don't
you
think.
Know, you know why? Whew. It would have been... fun. Like, we would have so much fun. And I'm not even saying because we'd argue. He seems like a very fun person to be
totally,
around.
Totally. All right. I want to start with something, Joey, you kind of mentioned a little bit earlier, and I'm gonna go here, and it is...
yucky.
Not fun news.
Nope.
It's not happy, joyous news, but you were talking about this a little bit earlier, but actually... Billy Graham's grandson has to step down from Florida megachurch.
Oh, boy. We got a double ender on this episode. CJ Mahaney up front, Tully and Chavita up on the end. I don't know how to say his name.
This, I know. I'm so glad you said it, though, because you always make fun of me.
Okay, let me try. No, I can get it.
You said,
no?
You
give me a shot.
You to slide it
give
in there.
Give me a shot.
Did you hear him, Joey?
I stuttered when I got to that. Give me a shot.
He tried to slide it in. He's like, oh, no, on the beginning of this, I tell her such a video.
That's what you always do. No, here's what I think it is. I think it's Tullian Chavijan. Tullian Chavijan. That's my guess.
It's pronounced Chavijan. Yeah.
Chavijan
is how the phonetics of it are. But and he's Billy Graham's grandson, and he was like up and coming. Billy Graham's grandson, Tullian Chavijan, has resigned from his pulpit at Coral Ridge Presbyterian, a high profile church in South Florida, after admitting he had an affair. He released the following statement to the Washington Post. I resigned from my position at Coral Ridge Presbyterian Church today due to ongoing marital issues. As many of you know, I returned from a trip a few months back and discovered that my wife was having an affair. Heartbroken and devastated, I informed our church leadership and requested a sabbatical to focus exclusively on my marriage and family. As her affair continued, we separated. Sadly, embarrassingly, I subsequently sought comfort in a friend and developed an inappropriate relationship myself. Last week, I was approached by our church leaders, and they asked me about my own affair. I admitted to it, and it was decided that the best course of action would be for me to resign. Both my wife and I are heartbroken over our actions, and we ask you to pray for us and our family that God would forgive us. We are amazingly grateful for the team of men mm-hmm. and women who are committed to walking this difficult path with us. Please pray for healing of deep wounds, and we kindly ask that you respect our privacy.
Mm-hmm. Well, hang on a second. I got several things on this.
One quick little add-on. I thought it was kind of interesting. Kim, his wife, wrote in a statement right after that. She said, the statement reflected my husband's opinions, but not my own. Please respect the privacy of my family at this time. Thank you. I was like, oh.
Wow.
So she didn't even want to agree to all that stuff. So I'll let y'all go ahead and have your say. I got something I want to say, too.
I got a ton of thoughts on it. Number one.
All right, go ahead.
Number one, those people in somebody tweeted this, because or Joey mentioned it earlier, because there's so many, three pastors in Florida in the same region having marital trouble and cheating and stuff like that. And it's because people in Florida are so damn good looking. They all have plastic surgery. You just can't stop. So it's just Florida. People are too good looking. That's the root of all this. You know what I mean? You're going to South Beach, Fort Lauderdale.
You know what? I never thought about it that way. You're right.
It's not their fault. You are right. It's not their fault. It's just too, you know, it's just the people there are too
Floridians
fine.
Look so damn
too fine.
Now, it's like the evil place.
But here's what I do think is interesting about it. There's tons of different ways to look at it. Now, on one hand, I kind of like his statement compared to other statements that we may have criticized, because it clearly says what it is. Like, this could easily be,
right.
This could easily be he stepped down for what you call it, moral failure, or to just take some time to whatever. So he's saying exactly what it is, which is good.
Yeah.
So I don't have a severe knock on the way he's handling it. And the respect my privacy thing. I mean, theoretically, you should always respect everybody's privacy. So that's not inherently wrong to say, especially when you've made with some details here. And then, again, it begins into the whole issue of, I guess that's all I got. I mean, he sought counsel with another woman. That seems like a no-brainer to do that.
They didn't say another woman. I don't know. They said another person. But one thing that I thought was really interesting was he requested a sabbatical to focus exclusively on his marriage and family. So pastors get to take sabbaticals. They go, hey, I can't work. I need to get
not necessarily. It's like, for example, Seacoast gives sabbaticals for pastors that have been there for 7+ years we want to encourage you to rest. It's not danger control necessarily.
Yeah, but I mean, Walmart doesn't do that.
Well,
I mean, IBM doesn't give you 6 months off pay.
If a church wants to do it, then what's
but I'm just saying that's not real. So why would a church do something that no other organization does? Why do pastors get that? Because the burden's so heavy.
Starbucks started something super cool.
I'm just saying. And to prove my point further, he asked for a sabbatical where he says, "I can't do my job, but I still need to take care of my family, so I'm not going to work. Thank you for paying for my job."
Right.
And during that time, all he did was hook up with somebody else.
Yeah, try that at Jamba Juice.
I know.
Tell your boss at Jamba Juice that your wife cheated on you. You need to
try that at Bad Christian. I'm not going to be on the podcast for 6 months, but or do anything. Please keep paying me. Right. Y'all already say I don't hardly do anything. Imagine if I didn't. It'd be a living nightmare. So I'm just saying, it seems a little absurd that he was going to do that, and then all of a sudden, that's where it came from. So my big point is, I agree with you, Matt. I think I was really glad that he owned up to a lot of it, but this is just me being skeptical, but if his wife wouldn't have cheated first, how much information would he have? He was real easy. Hey, my wife cheated on me. So then he was able, so it immediately puts you in, his wife did cheat on him. I feel kind of bad. You know what I mean? Like, if he'd have just cheated on his wife, and she might, he might have. Maybe that's why she did it. Who knows? But it is more and more, if preaching is the most important thing to a Christian Sunday event, then pastors need to quit doing it a lot and start listening, because it's just happening. They're dropping like flies, especially in Florida. And all over. I mean, it's not a sustainable business model right now for pastors. It's just not. And people go, yes, it is. You know how many pastors I know that? No, you know how many pastors say they're alone and depressed and miserable and unhappy, and they're just putting on their game face, as Joey says.
Yes, that's really good. It's exactly like people want to talk about cops. Oh, that's a troubled position. Like, it's a position to put people. Oh, it's really difficult. Yeah, it's really difficult. Certain types are attracted to it. There's a lot of stereotypes about it. Not all cops are bad. In fact, most are good. Same is true with preachers. But that doesn't mean we don't have to recognize in this group, there is a problem, whether it be with the training or the people it attracts or the culture put upon them or what we expect of them. This is a problem profession. It just is. There's a problem with that profession that needs to be worked on, not necessarily eliminated or anything, but it needs to be worked on. It needs to be aware. We have to be aware of the
problem.
And real
quick, this is kind of a surprise, because I knew I was going to do this new segment. I actually have a friend who is a pastor, and he's going to admit right now on air that he is cheating and has cheated a lot of times. Okay, go ahead. Take it away, Joey.
All right. Well,
Joey, how often have you cheated? I'm just kidding. Go. What are you going to say? Talk about the other pastor.
Well, no. What
What I was going to say,
you lost your train of thought. You're thinking about that booty again.
What I was going to say is, Matt, how accurate is that statement? Because my initial reaction to you saying it's a troubled profession, I want to say yes,
there's
totally.
There's trouble with that profession.
But what's the percentage of mega church pastors that have fallen into sexual sin? Or let's not
enough,
say even mega church.
Enough to be an alarm, enough to be looked at, but, enough to talk about. Okay, that's how many.
Okay, but why aren't you saying the same thing about doctors? I guarantee you a higher percentage of doctors are cheating on their wives in the doctor profession. But you're saying pastors. Now,
I don't care.
No,
if my doctor cheats or not. I mean, I don't. I mean, on a human level, I do, but professionally, I don't.
But if with your wife, you would?
What?
Or your friend's wife?
Sure, no, but that's, I don't understand the question. I mean, there's problems with this role of pastor that we have and the people that we do and how we treat them and how we train them and what we put on them. So it's only way to deal with it is to, you know, do more research. Instead of cover it up, we do more research. We need to be more thoughtful and get more information about what might be the problems that cause this type of thing, because it's devastating.
Yeah. Yeah, my reaction to the story, and I'll make it quick, is, and I know you guys don't like for me to defend what we do, but I just can't help to think about a lot of people that see us as being lackadaisical about sin and stuff, and this story just really, really bums me out. Like, it really, I read something like this and it just, it's a yucky feeling, and that's because I feel bad for the people involved. I hate the fact that we've set people up for this stuff to happen. I mean, are you serious? Do you really think this guy has been talking openly with other people that really know his business? And do you really think this guy has given the open door for other people to challenge him on a regular basis?
I don't know.
And
it's possible. I can't even speculate on that.
I don't think so. I don't think so.
All right, moving on. I mean, honestly, let's say that, you know, sometimes we need to stop, and I'm being serious right now. We do want people praying for this guy. He did not want to cheat on his wife. He did something, I believe, fully that he regrets and doesn't. Sure. I don't even think she wanted to. I don't think people's intent ever, no matter if you're a Christian or not, is to get married and cheat. If that is, then it's doomed from the start. So I don't think this was their intent. What I really want is to expose, hey, man, this is going to happen. This stuff's tough. I think we should be able to somehow keep this out in the open, help people, and then he might really actually have a gift to come back and preach or to do something. But I don't know in this model if it's that good. And they were talking about at the very end of this article, which I thought was interesting, was, you know, Billy Graham said during his years as an evangelist, Billy Graham had a rule that he would never meet, eat, or travel with a woman alone. And I was like, well, that's pretty interesting. And I thought probably really good, because he realized his own self. Now, the Washington Post takes a little bit of a twist on that, and I was like, you can't get away with anything. The Billy Graham rule is still discussed today among evangelicals, as some wonder whether it has hurt women from climbing in evangelical leadership. Huh. So that rule that he had,
right,
even though he was trying to protect his wife, try to be a good dude, not get caught in a situation where he might be weak, might have also led to women not having as much opportunity.
It definitely
to become,
led to that. That's for sure a consequence. Now, I can solve that real quickly, because anybody in their position that they're doing can do whatever they feel is right, they're called to do, or what's simply effective for them. To take that Billy Graham rule and apply it to other people, now you've got systematic problems that are going to harm people. So that's easy to solve. It's fine if he didn't want to. It's fine if I don't want
to.
It's fine if whatever. But that, as a system, is definitely detrimental to women.
Yeah.
It just is. Whether practical or not, for an individual, you just can't take it across the board and institutionalize that, or expect, or even passively as part of a large culture, you have to be aware of it if you're imposing that or not.
All right, I got one more news today. We've been going kind of long talking about all these Christians and all this stuff, but this is from WKYT News. Pike Sheriff, hot naked, Pike Sheriff says, hot naked man entered Walmart, doused himself with milk. It was 90 degrees Thursday, and a man apparently went into the South Williamson Walmart to cool off. The Pike County Sheriff's Department on Friday obtained an arrest warrant for a man who entered Walmart naked and shouted, "I'm on fire!" and then poured a gallon of milk on himself. The man left the store, hopped into a car with someone else, and left. Sheriff's deputies say the incident was caught on camera by a third party and uploaded to social media immediately. After investigating, deputies obtained warrants for Timothy Smith of Phelps and David Daniels of Belfry, a release does not say which man is accused of doing that. So I think this is just a joke. I think a guy walked in and wanted to yell. Yeah, it was a prank.
Because he had a getaway car. Nobody.
Joey, you've been known for pranks. Do you remember like your craziest prank? Have you ever gone into like a Walmart and yelled or screamed or done anything really crazy where like you got into almost in trouble?
Well, I mean, the closest I got in trouble was accusing you of wearing a leather jacket that you just got out of the gas station.
I was so mad at you. Joey was on tour with us. We're walking out of Bucky's, giant truck stop. And I had I think it was Bucky's, and I had my new leather jacket on, and they sell leather jackets there. And Joey goes, "What did you say, sir? Sir, you didn't pay for that jacket. Pay for that jacket, sir. Come back." And the lady goes,
as he was walking out looking, the door.
The lady behind the counter knew she had to do something, and I just kept walking, and then Joey had to go, "I'm sorry."
And she didn't believe me.
Yeah, she didn't believe me. Then she thought it was a big thing. So, yeah, thanks for screwing me a lot. So, anyway, well, that's it, guys. We got to get off the air. I mean, we've run a really, really long time. Remember, the most important thing, most important event during your week is when you're sitting on that toilet and you're dropping a deuce, you hit replay on this podcast.